Okay, everyone, shut up and look at me.
Prime Time with Isaac and Sue.
The less I know about other people's affairs, the happier I am. I'm not interested in caring about people.
Isaac Robb.
I once worked with a guy for 3 years and never learned his name. Best friend I ever had. We still never talk sometimes.
Jason Sukanik.
I also think it's pointless for a human to paint scenes of nature when they could just go outside and stand in it.
Prime Time on the Fan Sports Network, 105.1 and 1080.
Please do not misinterpret the fact that I am talking right now as genuine interest. End of speech.
The Fan.
All right. Welcome back. Hope you're having a nice, juicy, buttery, sexy little Wednesday. It's your sports bros. I'm Rop, the Isaac version of the Isaac and Sook show.
Yeah.
Sodded.
And Big Sook's right over there. Look at him.
With my Mets hat that I had to take off because, well.
He's ashamed of his Mets. They've lost again.
Yeah, I've officially mashed for the first time this year. It hasn't happened up until now. I have officially hit the panic button.
Yeah, I can see why.
They suck. It's not going good.
Dude, I haven't watched much Mets baseball this year. But
well, you turn around because it's always on, but it's on behind you.
It's only when you watch them.
Yeah.
And I got to tell you, every time I turn around and just catch a little bit of Mets baseball.
You're a giant jinx.
I see awful baseball. Like, their defense sucks.
Yeah. I swear to you, every time you turn around, it is at the most inopportune time. Someone's throwing the ball. It's usually a position player, probably the pitcher, throwing one into center field and letting a run score. And it's just like, I don't know what to tell you.
Team's a winning.
Or you turn around into someone's hitting into a double play and you're like, yeah, that's about
every
right.
Every
time. Yeah, it's not good.
Your team sucks.
It's not going good. I've resisted the panic button, but it's officially time. It's Concernicus has entered the building.
Before you get to football follow-up.
Hot football follow-up.
I've got quick baseball follow-up.
Okay.
And then we'll get to our teases for the rest of the show, and then we'll get on with our business today. Okay.
Our carefree ways.
But I was saying earlier that the Blue Jays beat the Rockies 20-1 today.
Yeah.
And that set a record. Toronto is the first team in baseball history to collect 63 hits, 13 home runs in 3 games.
Jeez.
But Buck sent me this little nugget, and it's about the Washington Nationals.
Hmm.
And I don't know if you've seen what's been going on with these bros.
And this was sent to me by the brand man Dusty Hara.
But
wow, look at this just train of information.
Milwaukee beat Washington 16-9 on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
They followed that up with an 8-2 win over the Nationals on Saturday, and Sunday they beat them 14-3.
Yikes.
So they scored 38 runs in those 3 games. Now that is not the 45 runs that Toronto scored in Colorado.
No.
But the Nationals turned around on Tuesday after a day off and gave up 16 runs to the A's. So the Nationals are the first team in Major League history in 4 games to give up 80-plus hits, 50-plus runs, and 10-plus home runs.
That's pretty tasty. So we now
they just won up the Blue Jays.
A battle of, it's a battle of futility and a battle of, excellence versus futility.
Isn't that crazy?
That is crazy.
80 hits in 4 games. That's nuts.
That is nuts.
50 runs in 4 games and 10 or more home runs in 4 games.
I'm looking at their, so they've lost 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. They've lost 6 in a row, and their run differential in that 3, 4, 9, 15.
This is great. I'm just going to wait.
Yeah.
Until you figure that out, because you ain't figuring that out.
Carry it 15, 26, and then 9. So
1, 2, 3, 4.
34? I believe 34?
Minus 34?
Minus 34.
In 6 games?
In that losing streak? Ah!
So if Toronto, well, I guess it's two, like you said, it's two opposite sides. So it's the team that with getting the hits and the team giving up the hits.
Battle of excellence, battle of futility.
But if Toronto wanted to match that, they're going to need 17 or more hits in tomorrow's game.
Are they still playing the Rockies?
I don't think so. I think series is over.
Then. Might be hard to do. We'll have to look and see who the Blue Jays are playing. Because we were playing the Rockies. Oh, yeah, they got the Dodgers.
But they would only need 6 runs.
Yeah, it's possible. And, you know, the Dodgers aren't exactly cooking with gas.
The Dodgers.
Yeah, I love how everyone's just the Dodgers.
Everyone hates the Dodgers now.
And yet they're still in first place.
Well, of course, they're good. That's why we hate them.
I'm going down to see them, a week from now?
Please tell them we hate them.
They're playing your San Diego Padres.
All right, let's get to your football news. You were teasing it. What do you got?
Well, you know, we were talking about how the NFL banned smelling salts, and George Kittle was freaking out, and that led us to talking about how great professional athletes and drugs are. Remember when you read the statement, it was a little weird. I asked. I was like, it said that the teams are prohibited from supplying. And I asked, I said, does that mean that they're banned, or does that just mean the players can't get them from the team? And a memo just came out like 20 minutes ago saying the NFL Players Association is aware of the memo issued by the league regarding smelling salts. We were not notified of this club policy change before the memo was sent out. To clarify, the policy does not prohibit player use of these substances, but rather it restricts clubs from providing or supplying them in any form.
Okay.
The NFL has confirmed this to us. If you have any questions, please reach out to your player director. So
they screwed up in their messaging.
Yes. Well, but when you read the message, it was very ambiguous.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. They screwed up the messaging. They should have said that the first time, and then we'd be like, well, why do you even say, who cares?
Yes. So smelling salts are not banned.
It's a liability thing?
That would be my guess. They're saying if it potentially could mask concussion syndromes, then a club could get accused of providing something.
Exactly.
And then someone has secondary concussion syndrome, and then you open yourself up to a lawsuit. So now it's more the long life. If George Kittle used, and by the way, they're dirt cheap. You just have to buy them, and then you can bring them, Baker and all those guys. So they were banned. People thought they were banned for all of 24 hours. And it's like, turns out they're not banned. So we can rejoice, smelling salts aplenty. Or maybe this was all done by big smelling salts to raise awareness of their capsules. Because this is the first time anyone has talked about smelling salts.
Is it possible this was just kind of a normal memo and George Kittle just didn't read the details and sprinted out and yelled about how they're taking him away? And it should have been a non-story?
That's a good point.
Because if they're just like, hey, by the way, teams can't provide these anymore, it seems like people thought, we can't have these. They're taking our guns, you know? But like, they're
true.
Not. Nothing's changed.
I think that's right.
That is a really good point.
He went all MAGA.
That George Kittle is the one that probably started this whole thing.
Started panic in the streets.
And then Baker chimed in, and now all hell's broken loose.
Looks like they're about a buck a piece for the big time ones. You get a 40 pack for about $38.
Seems a lot cheaper than those little bump skis you were talking about earlier.
Is that too much when they're just kind of one-offs?
I'm not going to lie. I thought this would be more like 50 cents.
Yeah.
But
I give them a couple quarters, but
I mean, infrequency of use, it seems like. Yeah.
Well, I guess.
We have them at the gym, and so it's like, I don't know. I'm sure you can find cheaper ones too. And like, there's certain ones that you just, it's like, it's like a jar. You just like open it and you smell the jar. It's like a fart in a jar, and you're like, oh my God. And then you put it back on there. So maybe that's the better value, but then you actually have to have like a big jar and bottle as opposed to the capsules.
Excuse me.
You're paying for the convenience of the little break capsules.
All right, coming up tonight in the club hour, a radio legend could be going away, and I am not talking about Danny Meringue.
He is here to. I think he just signed a new contract.
There you go. Also, Buck was trying to hit us with something as we walked off the air last night, because that's what we do. We walk off the air.
Yeah.
And
well, I stuck around because I had to watch the Mets lose. So
I didn't really understand what he was saying, but we're gonna
try to delve into it.
Yeah, it was a pretty quick explanation, but me and Suk ended up talking about it a bit longer, and maybe a noodle on it.
Could it be a topic?
Maybe.
I think it could. Let's discuss.
Also, a story about science. Because we love science here.
Do we?
Some of it.
I only like science when it confirms what I already believe.
Those scientists better check their hypotenuses, dude.
Even science wildly divided, with one side calling the other a boob.
I only listen to Joe Rogan for my science.
So that is all coming up 6 to 7. Up next, which team has more urgency? Some NFL talk when we return on The Fan. Okay, now to the NFL. I was I told you the other day that I bought that. I always buy the Aaron Schatz Football Outsiders Almanac.
Yes.
For each season.
Yeah.
And I like it because one, I do...
Is it a digital copy or an actual physical
No,
book?
It's digital. Yeah. He sells it online. I do like a lot of the analytics with regards to sport. I think it's interesting how they evolve and how they come up with just simply better metrics than all the basic metrics that we're used to.
Sure.
And Football Outsiders is the one who came up with, I don't know, it's like DVOA. And like if you read through their explanation of it, it is wildly better than any metric you can get just on, you know, just basic football metric. Yeah. Okay.
By the way, if you don't know, DVOA is the defense
adjusted
value over average.
Average. Yeah. So they, I mean, just not to get into the weeds, because it's a whole thing. Like, it's a 500 page.
It's like it's book. Yeah, this is like war, though. Like it's how you are versus what the league average is.
But
it
takes everything into account, like down and distance. Yes. You know, what part of the game are you? Are you down by 30? Are you up by 10? Is it critical play in the game? Just everything. Yes. And they do it for every player, every team. It's really incredible. Mm-hmm. And they've been doing it for many, many years, like over 20 years. Yeah. So anyway, I bought the 2025 one the other day. I'm ready to go. It's only $40. Well worth a read. Now, you know, I'm not going to read the whole thing because a lot of it is just like goes straight over my head.
Yeah.
It's so numbersy, but they have a preview for each team. That's what I always do. I go through each team. And it goes alphabetically. So I've already read about the Arizona Cardinals,
okay,
the Atlanta Falcons, the Baltimore Ravens, and the Buffalo Bills. Okay, that's where I'm at.
Okay. So you got to come some contenders and yeah, you know, some others.
I will tell you, and that's the other thing too, is like, there's a lot of deep level stuff about each team in there, mm-hmm, to the point where I really only come away with like a couple of key thoughts about each team.
Yeah.
Okay. Like, I'm not going super deep into all of this.
Why would you?
But I do like to hear their perspective based on their metrics about each team coming back, because I don't really follow a lot of the offseason moves. I don't care about preseason.
Sure.
I just. Just get me up to speed on what we think this team may be bringing to the table any given year.
And I'm sure it's interesting for the likes of maybe the Atlantas or the Cardinals, more so. Like, you know what the Bills are bringing to the table.
Fair.
But when you get, I would be more interested in a deep dive into a team like Atlanta or...
Well, I'll tell you what. They really like the Cardinals.
Yeah. A lot of people do.
They like the Cardinals. They think the Cardinals defensively... So again, here's my key takeaways from that chapter. One was they were super banged up on defense, particularly up front last year, and their back end held up, and they've improved all of that, and all those guys are healthy. Like, watch out for their defense.
Yeah.
Arizona Cardinals.
Yeah. The Cardinals are one of those teams that when you listen to people that are in the know, it's kind of one of those, if you're looking for someone that isn't really being talked about, they're saying keep an eye on that.
The other one was Kyler Murray. Their offense isn't that great. It's an average offense.
Yeah.
But Kyler Murray had his best year, according to them, of his career last year.
And they have a good old line, and they think
he's healthy.
They think another year with Marvin Harrison Jr.
And they like Gannon. He's the one that came over from the Eagles. So they like
the cards.
They did not like the Falcons. They were like, they kind of compared them to a rudderless ship. Like, they keep throwing crap against the wall, and it's the same thing every year.
They can't find a pass rush to save their life. The O-line is kind of up and down. They've moved on from Cousins and Penix now. We don't know what to make of Penix. We only saw him in a handful of games. So that makes sense.
So their big thing with Penix is like, look, they've pretty much just made it so that if the Falcons are going to be any good at all, they're pretty average. So in a bad division, a lot of it's about schedule.
Sure.
In a bad division, Atlanta will have moments. They're good enough that they'll have moments. They'll beat a couple teams. They'll do well in their division, and they will be sniffing around the playoffs.
Yeah.
But they said any improvement for Atlanta basically just has to be Michael Penix being really, really good, and they don't necessarily see that.
Well, and that's the same. I mean, Atlanta was 8-9 last year. So basically, Seattle's been this way for the last couple years. Unless you're a bad football team, like a bad team, you know, most of the time you're sniffing around that 8-9 win. And, you know, we know 10 or 11 is what gets you into the postseason. So, that again, all kind of plays out. If you're going to be more than that, yeah, you're going to need Penix to be amazing. Now, I don't understand how you can, this is where I will push back a little bit. How on earth can you say that you have any idea of what Michael Penix is going to be? I think you saw him in,
well, they don't.
In a handful of games.
And that's what they're saying about Atlanta, yeah. is like they have not really given him any help. They're basically just saying, same team, yeah. let's hope this guy's good.
Is better than
and Cousins. That's not a way to...
Sure.
Anyway, on to the real teams, the okay. Bills and the Ravens.
Okay.
And this is why I ask, who has more urgency? Because both of those teams... It's really wild how good they are statistically. So we know that the Bills and the Ravens have been very good.
Sure.
And just have not gotten to the Super Bowl because, well, Chiefs.
Yeah.
But if you read Football Outsiders Almanac, it lays out how good those teams are mm-hmm. over a 5-year period. As a matter of fact, I think the Bills are the best team over a 5-year stretch in NFL history, to not have gone to a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
So this, I mean, Buffalo, what Buffalo is going through right now is eerily similar to the 90s.
Yeah, except,
it is.
Except they went to 4 Super Bowls.
But they lost all of
them.
And this team has not been to a Super Bowl, but they're 61-22 over the last 5 years. That is the best of any team over a 5-year period since 1978.
Yikes.
So... That's the best of any team over any 5-year period since 1978, period.
Period.
And they're the only one that hasn't gone to the Super Bowl. That's crazy.
Yeah, I'm looking here. They've gone 13-4, 11-6, 13-3, 11-6, 13-3, 10-6.
And then the Ravens are the other team that statistically, like they had the best offense almost ever last year.
Yes.
And they're the team that just keeps shooting itself in the foot in the playoffs. Like the Bills have a Chiefs problem. The Ravens just continue to beat themselves with, and they're saying like with Baltimore, it's like kind of some of it's just kind of bad luck. They just had some bad things happen. They had the Tyler Huntley game where they're in the playoffs and Huntley's going in for the game winning score on a goal line sneak and he drops the ball.
Yep. Yeah. The Zay Flowers.
Zay Flowers dropped the ball.
Yeah.
On the goal line. Like they've had some really unlucky things happen. So the question is who, which of those two teams has more urgency, Buffalo or Baltimore? Because both of them should be gripping right now because these windows don't stay open that much longer.
I hadn't really thought about that, but that's a damn good question because both quarterbacks are relatively the same age. So it's not like one is older. You are dealing with Baltimore. You are dealing with Derrick Henry that you would figure eventually, that runs out. I think McDermott probably under a little more pressure than Harbaugh. They wouldn't get rid of Harbaugh. There was some talk that the Bills maybe needed to go in the different direction. Remember after the whole weird 9/11 speech? Boy, I think I'm going to say Buffalo.
More pressure on
more
Buffalo?
More pressure. Buffalo, Harbaugh at least has a Super Bowl. Lamar has MVPs, multiple. Harbaugh isn't going anywhere. I feel like Buffalo is under more pressure. I feel like Buffalo is a bad season, a disappointed season away from pulling a Tony Dungy and firing their coach and being like, we need to bring someone in that can get us over the hump. So yeah, I'm going to say more pressure, but that's a damn good question. Damn good. I'm going to say more pressure on Buffalo than Baltimore.
Do you think one or the other feels more inevitable that they, because they talk about this in here where it's like, you know, when you're this good, most people just expect you to get to break through. You will. You're just that good. Does one of those two feel more like that to you?
I feel more Baltimore because, again, I feel like Baltimore, when they find ways to lose, it's... Although, I mean, the Bills said the 17-second game. I mean, how do you lose that? How do you let them kick that field goal? You won them. You drove the ball.
That was the championship game?
That was the...
Wasn't that AFC title game?
I think it was the AFC title game. It's the AFC title game, or it was
might not
to get to the AFC title game. But you had the Chiefs built or slayed, and you know if you win that. I believe Buffalo goes on and wins the Super Bowl because Kansas City went on and won that Super Bowl. I just feel like Baltimore is they do it to themselves, and I feel like eventually that is going to get cleaned up, and so I guess I feel more inevitable about Lamar Jackson. I feel more inevitable about the Ravens. And I think it's a better team. I think it's been a better team. I think there's better talent. And you can debate all you want between Lamar and Josh Allen. They're both, you know, they're one of 4 truly elite quarterbacks in the NFL. but I'm putting more pressure on Buffalo, and I think it's more inevitable that eventually, like, if you had to ask me 5 years from now, only one of those has a Super Bowl ring. Lamar has a ring. Josh Allen does not.
Yeah, it's just kind of wild when you think about the AFC having the Chiefs and what they're doing, but also the Ravens and Bills. Mm-hmm. And we kind of lose sight of that because it's just been the Chiefs.
Just been the Chiefs.
But those three teams, dude, have been freaking dynamite.
Well, if you took any one of those and you bump them over into the NFC, I think you have the Super Bowl representative year after year after year. Although, you know, hey, man, maybe Philly is about to go on one of these runs, because Philly's roster is really damn good. I just don't view Philadelphia and their quarterback, and it's not a knock on Jalen Hurts. Jalen Hurts is a good quarterback. He's not those three guys, and it's not even close. So I do think if you take any one of those three teams and put them in the NFC, it's the favorite every single year. And with Lamar and with Josh, it sucks because not only do you have to fight each other, but you've got this damn guy by the name of Patrick Mahomes, who has been a starting quarterback 7 years in the NFL, and he has made the AFC title game seven times.
Yep. It's crazy. So just to run through real quick, they have a little paragraph in here on, if just to remind you what the Ravens have gone through in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Because they're saying, hey, listen, when you're battling the Chiefs dynasty and you're fighting against the Bills, who are the best team over a five-year span since 1978, all in your conference, that means everything needs to break right for a team like the Ravens to get where they want to go, even if they're the best team. And it just has not broken right. In 2018, the Chargers matched the Ravens' speed by leaning into a dime defense. The following season, as the number one seed in the divisional round, the Ravens suffered three turnovers and two fourth down stops against the Titans while allowing Derrick Henry to run for 195 yards. 2020 divisional round, Bills heavily blitzed Lamar Jackson, which results in three sacks, a pick six, and just 34 rushing yards on nine attempts. 17-3 Buffalo win. We can skip over the 2022 wild card loss to the Bengals because it was that Tyler Huntley game, but it set the stage for future Ravens losses. That meeting was decided on a fluke turnover when a potential go-ahead touchdown from the one-yard line turned into a fumble recovery for a touchdown for Cincinnati. After the 2023 season, the Ravens made it to the AFC Championship game against the Chiefs. On a second down with the Ravens trailing 17-7 at the start of the fourth, Jackson found Zay Flowers with space a few yards in front of the end zone. Flowers dove and stretched his arms out across the goal line, but lost the ball before reaching the end zone, and it resulted in a touchback for the Chiefs. On the following drive, Baltimore got back into the red zone, but Jackson forced a ball to Isaiah Likely that was picked off. Two unforced errors came on a night when Patrick Mahomes did not make a mistake, finishing with the QBR of 91.3. Then you have the divisional round to the Bills this past season, where the Ravens hung in the game only to be outdone by more mistakes. We all know what those were. The drop ball by Mark Andrews, the two picks by Lamar Jackson. Yep. Dude, it's crazy how much things have not gone their way in the playoffs.
And then the weird, you know, the one that gets me, and there's so many, because some of those, like you said, are just, you know, they're self-inflicted wounds. In the second half of the Chiefs game where they ran the ball with their running backs three times, it was the number one rushing attack in the NFL. And in the second half, I think they handed the ball off to their running back three times. Like, to this day, I think that was Monken, who was the OC. To this day, no one has ever given an explanation for that. I swear to God, he was on the take. Something,
I mean, they just were wrong. They had a bad game plan.
But think about that. The Chiefs, the one thing the Chiefs didn't do well is stop the ball. The Ravens were running roughshod over everyone in the NFL, and then they were like, you know what we're going to do? Not run the football.
So the Ravens, you may be asking yourself, this is the last thing, and then we'll move on, but I thought that Football Outsiders asked a good question. They asked, is that normal? You know, it's like, okay, so you have these plays. They basically had three straight years where they had the worst play at the worst time.
Yeah.
So the solution could be as simple as, well, just stop doing that.
Stop doing that. Yeah.
But they're saying it is more common than it should be for a team of Baltimore's caliber. In other words, I've always wondered, is there something in the water with Harbaugh? Been to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, he's won
the Super Bowl.
Won the Super Bowl.
So it's hard to say this, but dude, there's something. We always say in college, we don't trust Mario Cristobal.
Yeah.
We always say we don't trust Steve Sarkisian. Why do we trust John Harbaugh?
Yeah, because they won the one Super Bowl. That's it.
But they keep blowing it. And they're blowing it in ways that bad teams blow it.
Yes, it is. That is correct. And it doesn't stick to him. It really doesn't, because imagine if they hadn't won that Super Bowl, if the other Harbaugh had won it. John would be on a hot seat because they continually find ways to inexplicably lose games.
So if you had to say, and you already answered this, but yeah. if you had to say who you more confident is going to win a Super Bowl, before it's all said and done, yeah. I actually think it's Buffalo.
Just because of that, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
No, I could see it.
Buffalo's just lost to a dynasty.
Yeah.
Whereas the Ravens, they'll lose ways to anybody.
Yeah. They find ways. Find ways.
Anyway, that's from Football Outsiders Almanac 2025. It's done by Aaron Schatz, and it's great. And that's only the first four teams.
Yeah.
Wait till I read more tonight with some cocktails. I'll be tweeting out.
I just picture Rob in some boxers and black socks. He's got an old-fashioned straightaway cocktail just flipping
through. That's right.
Let's do a deep dive into the Jacksonville Jaguars here.
Dude, I love it. All right. The rise of the college football GM. That's next. Here's Buck. Quick.
Go.
Name the GM of the Oregon Ducks football program.
Yeah, it's the guy from Texas A&M. He's kind of got a funky name.
It's a funky last name. It's Marshall Malchow or something like that?
It's double M's. He's Eminem.
Malchick?
Something like that.
Malchalkelk?
And I don't think he's the GM. I think they have a different...
His name is Marshall Malchow.
Yes.
Or perhaps Malchow.
Nailed it.
Yeah. Some white guy. I don't know. And he is the general manager.
I thought they called him the chief of staff.
This says general manager, but it's not off the official Ducks website.
Maybe
so.
He was promoted.
Well, like chief of staff, they don't always call them general managers, but they act as a general manager.
But the chief of staff can do more day-to-day stuff, whereas the GM may be doing more of the financials and things. So I'm not sure it's always the same person.
He's from Augusta, Georgia,
mm-hmm.
and he went to Alabama.
Yes, and that's where he met Lanny, and I believe at Alabama. And then he went on. He was the guy that put together – remember when old Slice Bread was talking about the Texas A&M? It was the number one recruiting class of all time.
Yeah.
He was the guy that put that together. And so I think when Lanny ended up at Oregon, they always had this deal of, hey, when I land someplace, we're going together. And that was one of the first hires that he made.
Yeah, so I don't know if this is true, but it's just something I think. And it's that if we, I don't know, maybe I'm just an old school guy. Like, I just think if more is being said about your GM,
mm-hmm.
that is bad for your program. Because I know it's an important job. It's the rise of the college football GM it's a thing.
Yes.
But I just still think it's about the head coach more than anything.
That you hope they're not making news, your GM, or that they're just kind of behind the scenes?
Yeah, like, well, I was reading an article about the highest paid college football GM. Do you guys know who it is?
Maybe someone at Texas, Ohio State.
He's a famous name.
He's a famous name.
Yeah.
Well, they've hired some other ones. Like I remember like Andrew Luck, right? I think is that guy at Stanford.
It's who Belichick hired. It's David Lombardi at North Carolina.
Michael Lombardi.
There you go.
Yep. North Carolina's general manager is making $1.5 million per year. And, he's a media guy, right? Isn't he? Or
Lombardi?
Yeah.
I think he was in.
I thought he was a media guy.
I think he served for a long time in NFL front offices. There's a bunch of those guys that have done both.
So Belichick hired him.
Yes.
And so his contract runs through 2028. His bonus structure pays out 1 month's salary for a non-elite bowl game and 1.5 months for an elite non-college football playoff game, 2 months' salary for reaching the college football playoff for the ACC championship game.
Okay.
So they gave him a lot of dough.
Yeah.
Next on the list.
By the way, he has a long list of being he was a chief scout. He was the player. Okay. He was director of player personnel for the Eagles, the Raiders. He was one of those guys.
Well, I don't know how much Malchow.
And by the way, he is listed officially on their website as the chief of staff.
I don't know how much he makes, but I'm just pointing out that I'm glad we don't know his name.
Yeah.
Because we'd make too much. Because I'm sure they're going to make way too much of Michael Lombardi.
Sure.
That is really about Bill Belichick and his staff coaching up in recruiting and coaching.
Yes.
Right.
And a lot of the job as the general manager is now, it's managing your salary cap. Every school has a salary cap. And so, like someone kind of jokingly put in, you're the director of the bag. And it's essentially right. When you're the general manager, it is now your job to mind the transfer portal. It's your job to know how much money you have for NIL, how it's going to be allocated. It is not an unlimited resource. Now you have to figure out what you're going to do with the revenue share, who gets what, all of that stuff. So yes, in a broad sense, the general manager is in charge of money distribution and building a team because you now have to pay for your team.
So I wonder if we're just because the thing that sets Lombardi apart, and I'll read you who the next highest paid GMs are in college football right now. The thing that sets Lombardi apart is he was actually a GM.
Yes.
As you mentioned.
Yes.
So you just wonder when are we going to get to the point where the college football GM is just their front office execs from the NFL.
Sure.
Or they've actually done this. It's interesting that he's the only one that was actually a general manager. And I get that the
roles aren't quite the same.
Yeah, they're not quite the same. But at the same time, it would be good to have had experience in a general manager role in football.
Yes. I guess the difference would be in the NFL is you can acquire a lot more talent in college because there's nothing real to stop you.
But some of it's just flat out scouting and figuring out which players are worth the money.
Yes.
That's
There is an element of, so I've talked to enough people behind the scenes where there will be something along the lines of this. You go into an off season and you say, hey, for instance, let's take Oregon. Oregon had three offensive line positions that needed to be filled. And you look at that and you need, as a GM, you need to sit down with Dan Lanning and say, okay, what do we have coming through, right? We lose both of our tackles and we lose a guard, right? What do we feel about our depth coming up? And Lanning and the GM sit down and say, well, no, we probably need at least one, probably two tackles. And, you know, we could use a guard as well. Cool. What do we do about quarterback? No, we feel pretty good about quarterback. We got Dante Moore. We got a couple backups. We got some young guys we like. Cool, that's there. And so you take that and you're like, all right, so what's our budget? And now you go out and it's that general manager's needs to know what the market is for tackles. He needs to understand how much is it going to cost us to go get tackles. And Oregon got, by the way, three premier. They got the number one and probably number four tackle in the portal. They landed, I think, the number two guard out of USC. And it's up to the GM to then figure out, all right, if we allocate this, do we have money to go out and get the safety we need or to get the defensive lineman?
Right, but
need?
I still think that the safety you need or the defensive lineman you need is the talent evaluation is coming from the coaches.
Yes.
And the head coach.
Yes.
So I just wonder when are we going to get to the point
scouting department
where the college football the college football GM is more important than the coach,
because
we're not there yet.
No. And you wonder too when they will start deploying, because it's such a, there's so many teams to look at. You wonder how many who's the Michigan guy, the scene stealer?
Sign stealer.
Connor Stallions.
You wonder how many times, and this may be a budgetary thing, but are going to start putting together like NFL-like scouting staffs that their whole job is to just scout other teams, but when you're scouting other teams, start identifying players that we can go snag in the offseason.
Think about this. The first coach, because these coaches, and Lanning has even talked about this, they are spread way too thin.
Yes.
Which is why they have to have a GM and a big staff, right?
Yeah.
The first coach to go, you know what? I am going to hire, I'm going to put my resources into my GM and his staff.
Yeah.
And I'm going to let them find me the players. Now, we're going to be on the same page in terms of what I need, what I want, what I look for.
Yeah.
But I am going to take that completely off my plate and let them give me a team.
Yeah.
And I am going to spend all of my time coaching up that team. Mm. The first one that has success doing that it's going to change the game.
Well, maybe Bill is the first guy that's going to attempt to do that, but he won't be around long enough to probably see the fruits of those labors at North Carolina. He'll be there for 3-4 years tops, and then he'll move on. But it certainly feels like this is...
See, right now, I just feel like college
that way.
College coaches don't want to relinquish control.
Yes.
Like, well, they still feel like... Like, there's not the college scouting There just aren't a lot of people with that acumen. Like, who's going to sit down and tell Dan Lanning, I know I can build a better roster than you can? You can't.
Well, and this is the problem in the NFL is we see so many coaches that want the GM role and they can't do it. I think Bill's really been the only one that's been successful. Well, in college,
it's two different roles.
It's two different roles. And in college so far,
it's still only one kind of.
It's still only one. And it's going to be hard to wrestle it away from
Bingo.
Big ego coaches that, like you said, that's going to be a tough task.
So after Lombardi, USC's Chad Bowden makes in the $1 million range. Vince Merrow left Kentucky for Louisville to earn $1.2 million. Mark Pantoni, among the longest tenured in the space and the owner of the most recent national championship, signed a three-year deal this offseason starting at $900,000. Texas Tech's James Blanchard turned down Notre Dame to sign a three-year deal worth $1.6 million. Alabama's Courtney Morgan will make a reported $825,000 in 2025.
Sounds like a decent bargain.
And Jim Nagy left the Senior Bowl for a $750,000 salary at Oklahoma.
Yeah.
You're just there to
raise money and distribute it and make sure you
these costs aren't going up yet because they're still worried about how they're going to pay players.
Yeah.
But once they get all that settled and they get a couple of new TV contracts and they have a bunch of money coming in, once college football is actually bringing in the revenue that it should, this right here, these positions, that's where the money's going to go.
You wonder too, like people are saying on here, and it's a valid point, recruits want to connect with the people who will be coaching them. That's true. But more and more, you have to have the money to pay them. And you wonder if we start to see less of the coaching connection and more like a pro model where, hey man, this is about dollars and cents. Because now it's about dollars and cents, but there is that connection. You've yet to see that really become the true pro model. And you're right. It'll be interesting to see over the next handful of years because it certainly feels like it's trending that way.
All right. We will wrap up the sports hour here on the program. Coming up next on The Fan. So the listeners looked this up. Or a listener, not all of them, just one of them. But all it takes is one, Jace.
Mm-hmm.
And a Marshall Malchow? Does anybody know how to pronounce it correctly?
Malchow. I don't know.
Malchow. It ends in a W.
I'll see if I can find an interview.
He's the chief of staff at Oregon. He made $501,667 last year.
He should ask for a raise.
Well, he got there, and so it gives his salary for each year he's been there because, of course, public institution.
They're saying it's pronounced like the replacements quarterback Shane Falco, so Malcho.
Or Malco?
Malco? Falco? Yeah.
Can
that was not
Can
good.
You clip all that? I want to go listen to that again. He said, it says it's like Falco, so Malchov.
Falco.
Falco? So Malcho?
Malco.
Malco?
Malco.
Malco.
So the W can't mean anything.
Okay. Marshall Malco.
Malco.
This
according to 247 Sports.
He made $264,000 his first year, $444,000 the next year, and $501,000 last year. So he has almost doubled his salary in, you know, three seasons.
Well, they are. I think right now on the recruiting rankings, it's one of those things because they don't have as many commits. USC, I think, technically has the number one recruiting class, but Oregon per commit, it's the highest rated class.
Yeah. But again, I wonder how much of that is Lanning.
Yeah, versus,
and who could you be trained to be the chief of staff? You sit down with Lanning and you could do the same thing.
I have been told that one of the first things that Lanning did when he got here was he wanted this guy.
Yeah.
That he knows recruiting. He knows how to train the coaches to go recruit. Oregon has I don't know how much they want to talk about. Oregon has they have a recruiting playbook that they make their coaches. It's like if you're a salesman and you're a great salesman, you want your sales staff all trained in the same way. And
it's like Oregon, a big seminar.
Yes.
They've come up with the way that works for them and they want to spread it through the group.
And this guy is part of that. And then he is, again, handles the money and makes sure it gets where it needs to go and all of that. So, how much of that is him versus Dan Lanning the recruiting? I think that certainly is a team effort. I think there's a ton that goes into that. Who's in charge when they come to the recruiting visits and the photo shoots? They are a well-oiled machine. And like USC had their head up their ass for a long time when it came to this. And you mentioned they went and hired someone that's making a bunch of money now. And all of a sudden, USC's got their NIL in order, and USC is putting together one of the best recruiting classes in the country. So, you know, whether this is all Dan Lanning and how much of this goes to the chief of staff or the general manager, it is becoming, in a sense, that if, like in the NFL, you have to have a good GM, you have to have a good head coach, you have to have a good owner. That's becoming college football. Have to have an elite coach. You got to have a guy that's in on whatever you want to call him as a general manager. And it certainly helps to have an owner. And by owner, I just mean school or booster that gives you financial backing. Because if you don't have it, there's nothing you can do. I mean, it's a dollars and cents thing. If you have remember when Jimbo left Florida State, what did he say about Florida State? He's like, I can't get anything done. I can't get the money that I need. I can't get the facilities that I need. And he left for A&M. And, you know, you've heard this many times about programs. UCLA has a terrible problem with this. It's just hard to get anything done. But when you're at Oregon or you're at Ohio State, dude, you snap your fingers and say, hey, we need XYZ. And whether it's donors, the administration, or whatever, they get the resources that they need.
There's a reason that man's salary has almost doubled.
Yes. They're saying it's pronounced like the Replacements quarterback Shane Falco, so Malcho.
That is fantastic.
Yeah, that's good. Good times.
Why did you say
it's,
that?
Pronounced like the know. Replacements quarterback Shane Falco, so Malcho. I guess I can't get over the way it looks.
Malcho.
Because it's M-A-L-C-H-O-W.
Yeah.
And so it's that, and then it's right next to Falco, which is F-A-L-C-O. I guess I can't get the
mental block there.
Well, there's a C-H and a W. I can't get over it.
They're saying it's pronounced like the Replacements quarterback Shane Falco, so Malcho. Malco.
This is one of my favorite new drops. Well, I'm not going to lie.
Doesn't need to be shortened, Shane Falco, so Malcho? Or do we want the front part there?
Well, it's long. If the best clips are, you got to find it. A way to...
All right, we'll tighten it up.
Diner up.
Falco, so Malcho.
Malcho.
Where's it? We need a tag to a.
Oh, God.
To a tag Ovalia.
Ovalia.
Me and my POTUS.
You guys.
That's like horseradish.
Pretty much the same guy, am I right?
One and the same.
I need Being a man of increase?
I need better hair and a orange tan.
Maybe 200 more pounds?
Apparently a 2.8 handicap.
Yeah.
Greatest in presidential history.
Does he say he's a 2.8?
Oh, yeah. He won his 36th club championship over the weekend.
Doesn't he claim he weighs like 230 or something?
6'3", 215, I think.
215?
Yeah.
He hit a drive the other day.
He weighs 215?
And look, the guy can golf. He actually can play
golf. It's a weird swing, but...
He can play golf. He likes golf. And so he had a drive the other day, and the, I don't know, his Twitter account was like,
open his new course, Trump Turnberry, and it was the inaugural shot. So it was a high-pressure shot, and he striped it.
Yeah, right down the middle of the fairway. And
but then
like,
we have
look at this, 282 yards right down the middle.
What?
That's what they wrote on there.
Okay.
And somebody went through and looked at the yardage book at that golf course.
220?
215.
Well,
it was a great shot. He's 79. It's fine.
Right.
You don't have to do that.
So I have a good buddy of mine, Liquor Rick, who was basically a professional golfer. Dude is ridiculous. But, you know, he's in his 70s now. And, you know, you don't hit the ball 290 down the middle when you're damn near 80. And by the way, come on, 226? That's
what 215.
I think the last one I looked it up, they're claiming 226. 226 or 215? No, his weight.
Oh,
which is worse? Which is the bigger lie? 292 down the middle, or that he weighs 226?
Ooh,
come on.
Well, what does he really weigh? Do you think?
Because he's my height.
So he's hitting it about 220 off the tee.
He's
saying 280, 290. It's kind of the same thing.
It's kind of the same thing because he probably weighs about 280.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was gonna say 275.
I think
the bigger lie is the weight.
The weight,
because. I don't know. I think more people are like, what? Okay. Yeah.
It's called
Whereas
sports.
Golf, some people may be like, all right, nice drive.
Yeah, they said their claim is from April 16th, 6'3", 224. Come on.
It's amazing. All right. We will be back with Club Radio, a legend maybe going away. Next on The Fan.
They're saying it's pronounced like the replacements quarterback Shane Falco, so Malchol.